together, would you please?
Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue Wednesday, April 10th. We will have a public hearing today and a public hearing tomorrow also, anticipating that there were a number of people who want to be able to speak to us about the topics. We have a public hearing on five bills. I will open the bills all at the same time so that none of you needs to speak more than once, because the topic you want to speak about has to be mentioned in more than one bill. You would need to speak only once, and then we'll know that your comments are relevant to whichever of the bills that topic appears in. And committee, we have a number of people who have signed up to testify. It's my hope that we can work our way through hearing as many people as possible, so we will hold all of our questions until the end of the public hearings, and then Legislative Revenue Office can get answers for us or responses. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2123, House Bill 2158, House Bill 2159, House Bill 2169, and House Bill 2270. Governor Brown is with us. Let's hear from Governor Brown.
Good morning, everyone.
For the record, Governor Kate Brown, Madam Chair, Vice Chairs Finley and Marsh, I very much appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 2270, which will generate an additional $346 million for the Oregon Health Plan. House Bill 2270 is one part of a six-year revenue package to provide long-term funding for the Oregon Health Plan. By increasing the cost of tobacco products and e-cigarettes, House Bill 2270 not only provides the funding we need to continue to provide health care coverage to Oregonians, it invests in prevention and cessation to improve the health of our communities. The health care funding package was developed by a work group I convened over a year ago. The work group consisted of leaders from healthcare, business, labor, and community organizations. Their charge was to identify long-term sustainable funding for the Oregon Health Plan without cutting eligibility or benefits. I'd like to thank the members of the work group for their consensus-driven approach to solving our health care funding challenge. I think you already know I've signed the first legislation, House Bill 2010, into law. House Bill 2270 will improve health and save lives. Tobacco is still the number one preventable cause of disease and death in Oregon. 27% of adults on the Oregon Health Plan smoke, and the cost of tobacco-related illnesses, including asthma, heart disease, and low birth weight babies, accounts for 9% of the total spending of the Oregon Health Plan. Our current cigarette tax rate is among the lowest in the nation. Raising the tobacco tax by $2 per pack will put Oregon on par with nearby states. It's an effective and proven way to get people to quit smoking. In addition to increasing the cigarette tax, House Bill 2270, for the first time ever, taxes e-cigarettes. They are among the most popular nicotine product among Oregon youth. The U.S. Surgeon General reports that 1 in 5 high school students and 1 in 20 middle school students use e-cigarettes. Raising the price on e-cigarettes will go a long way toward preventing these kids from becoming addicted from these very harmful products. Finally, we know that 2/3 of people on the Oregon Health Plan who smoke want to quit. 10% of the revenue raised by House Bill 2270 will go towards investments in tribes, culturally specific organizations, and state and local public health to expand cessation efforts. Big tobacco companies have targeted low-income communities and communities of color for decades. We need to make sure that these communities have the resources they need to help people quit. The majority of Oregonians support this increase. I urge your support of House Bill 2270.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Governor. Thank you for joining us this morning.
It's a delight.
and an honor.
I would like to hear the first panel, Dr. Bud Pierce, Representative Rachel Prusak, and Dr. Jen Vines.
Hi.
Dr. Pierce, would you mind speaking first, please?
Oh, sure.
Well, thanks for letting me speak today. I'm Dr. Bud Pierce. I'm a citizen of Polk County. I am a member of the American Cancer Society, but I'm speaking as a cancer doctor. This is a very pertinent topic to me. So I'm in my 42nd year in medicine. I've seen many thousands of people suffer needlessly and die prematurely because of cigarette smoking, passive attacks, raise attacks, House Bill 2270, so less people smoke. Cigarettes are a unique product. When used as directed, they're dangerous. There really aren't any other products like that. One puff can make your blood sticky, leading to a stroke and a heart attack. Pass the tax, so less people smoke. I've heard it's necessary for poor people to have low-priced cigarettes, so that's not a good, so we need to not raise a cigarette tax. So I'd like to tell you that I'm the deepest of blue collar in my background. I'm a janitor's kid. In high school, after high school, every day I went and bagged groceries for tips. I worked on the weekend. When I went to college, I would work weekends as an orderly in a nursing home. I sold my plasma for money. I know that's not a proper thing for people to do, but you know, when you need the money, you do what you need to do. And I will tell you that the people in the blue-collar neighborhoods are wise. They're intelligent. They tend to be undertrained and undereducated. Passing the tax will make people less likely to smoke. They'll say it's too much money. It'll give them that extra nudge, and they'll thank you. And finally, when the lobbyists come around and they have their money, which I view as blood money, money gained on the suffering of citizens, and they encourage you to support a smaller tax or to waive this, I encourage you to simply say no, pass the tax, and help save lives. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh and Finley, and members of the committee. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify on the critical public health issue of tobacco and nicotine use in Oregon. For the record, my name is Rachel Prusak. I'm honored to speak today, not only as state representative for House District 37, but also as a nurse practitioner and a proud member of Oregon Nurses Association. I'm so excited to stand with nurses across the state in support of House Bill 2270 to increase the tax on cigarettes and finally implement a tax on e-cigarettes in Oregon. Ultimately, I am tired of seeing my patients, too often the working poor, who were targeted by big tobacco in their youth, die premature and painful deaths because of the impacts of tobacco. This weighs on me every day. And it also ultimately weighs on the state. Currently, the Oregon Health Plan spends roughly $374 million a year just treating tobacco-related illnesses. Meanwhile, the big tobacco industry is profiting at unprecedented rates. We know that the best way to deter access, particularly for youths, is by raising the price. And yet, Oregon currently ranks 32nd in the nation in cigarette taxes and leaves e-cigarettes totally untaxed. It's time that we as lawmakers stand up to big tobacco. Not only have they spent millions of dollars to target communities of color, tribes, and low-income folks over the decades, they are now using that same playbook to target youth to use e-cigarette products like Juul. It's time that we hold them accountable for their actions. House Bill 2270 will reinvest into these target communities by contributing already invested funds into the Oregon Health Plan, as well as into culturally specific organizations, tribes, and to cessation and prevention programs across Oregon. This bill is a critical opportunity to help fund programs that millions of Oregonians rely on, but it will also have a direct impact on the health of patients like mine. Smoking is still the number one cause of preventable death in Oregon today. I'm going to repeat this. Smoking is the number one cause of preventable deaths in Oregon. Studies show that this proposal will prevent over 19,000 kids from ever taking up smoking and help 31,000 Oregonians quit. I came to Salem to help Oregonians live healthier lives through access to affordable health insurance, but also by improving all of the structural pieces in our society that have a huge downstream effect on health.
As a nurse practitioner, I have an obligation to use every tool in my toolbox to try to prevent my patients, our constituents, from pain and harm. It's time that as a state legislature, we take on that same obligation. House Bill 2270 is a thoughtful and common sense tool for making sure that tobacco use is no longer the leading cause of death in our state. Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Finley and Marsh, and members of the committee, I am Dr. Jennifer Vines, a family doctor by training and deputy health officer for Multnomah County Health Department. I have over a decade of experience working as a county health officer in Oregon, and I jumped at the chance to provide testimony in support of House Bill 2270 today because it is such a far-reaching public health win for Oregonians. Tobacco use is still a major driver of the top causes of premature deaths and costs our state billions each year in medical costs and lost productivity. Our public health system is simultaneously working to address the increasing popularity of inhalant devices and nicotine delivery systems among kids and young adults, and I'll refer to these devices in my testimony as e-cigarettes. I'd like to briefly address the three most compelling components of the bill. So first, a significant increase in cigarette taxes. Most adults who smoke started before age 18 and almost all by age 26. The Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids estimates that every 10% increase in cigarette prices reduces youth smoking by about 7%. So higher cigarette prices means less tobacco use among youth and young adults, setting them on a course for better health as they continue into adulthood. Second, implementation of an electronic cigarette tax. Electronic cigarette use among school-age kids has emerged as a public health issue in my county and across the state and nation over the last several years. Electronic cigarettes are not water vapor. They are devices for inhaling nicotine, which is highly addictive and harms the developing adolescent brain. Studies show an association between youth nicotine use and behavioral problems in later life, such as depression, anxiety, and other substance abuse. So the same idea applies here. Higher prices makes these devices less attractive to young people, and that's a good thing for their lifelong health. I want to point out that in 2017, Oregon raised the minimum age for tobacco and electronic cigarette purchase to 21. That was another public health win. But I want to emphasize that it takes a multi-pronged approach to reduce smoking and nicotine addiction among youth and young adults. There is no one silver bullet, and this bill includes what are widely considered best and promising practices in preventing tobacco use. I'd also like to add a word for adults who want to quit tobacco and deserve our support. When considering an electronic cigarette tax, I would urge you to strike a balance between making the costs high enough that youth do not purchase them, while at the same time making them less expensive than cigarettes. There is limited evidence that electronic cigarette use may support adults who want to quit smoking, and I would not want to see a tax that puts electronic cigarettes out of their reach. Third and finally, this bill directs funds to the Oregon Health Authority for tobacco use prevention and chronic disease prevention. Our local and statewide public health system has so much to offer in achieving better health at lower cost, and this provision maximizes the public health benefit of increasing the prices of these products. Thank you for taking up this important piece of legislation and for the chance to testify today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. The next panel. I want you to know that I am going to try to take these more or less in roughly in the order that you signed up, but I'm also paying attention to alternating panels so that we get varying points of view and not load it all up on one day with one type of comment and another day with another type of comment. And I'm also looking for those of you who've traveled a further distance to try to be able to get you in since you are here today. And those of you who we won't get to today, because there are at least 39 of you who've signed up to testify. If you do the math, we won't be able to hear from everyone today. So some of you may need to come back tomorrow if you decide you still want to testify. Then again, if your point has already been made, you may decide there's no need for you to come back another day, or some of you may choose to make very short comments and say, I agree with person A or person B who spoke before me, and keep your comments brief. After these first two panels, which I'm going to hope will limit their remarks to 3 minutes each, I'm going to reevaluate, do a time check. It may be that everyone for the whole morning gets 3 minutes each, or to fit more of you in, I may reduce the time to 2 minutes each, hoping that much of what you're saying might parrot what someone else had said, and you can just paraphrase or summarize. So the next panel, which I will make sure you get 3 minutes each, will be Emily Smith and Tyler Henson, perhaps, someone whose name is right below Paul Cosgrove, and Jonathan Polansky. And whichever one gets there first, please go ahead and start.
Good morning. Chairman Nathan, Vice Chairs Marsh, Finley, committee members, my name is Jonathan Polansky. I'm the president and CEO of Plaid Pantry. We own and operate 108 convenience stores, primarily in the Portland metro area. We oppose House Bill 2270 because it is unreasonable and will likely have unintended consequences. We've submitted written testimony. I hope you've had a chance to review it. I won't go through every detail, but I would like to emphasize a few points. First, a 150% tax increase is unprecedented and just not fair. Second, making it illegal to sell cigars in packages of 20 or fewer is extreme. A 150% tax increase is damaging to small business and our employees, because it will drive many of our customers to illegal, untaxed sources. Legitimate retailers like Plaid will lose more than tobacco sales. We will also lose the profit from additional sales that those people would have purchased. Washington has a horrible smuggling rate of 44%. This proposed tax increase would result in a similar effect here in Oregon, and it will not raise nearly the revenue that is anticipated. This 150% tax increase would also be very regressive and would primarily impact your low-income constituents. Revenue increases should be done fairly and progressively from all citizens. Cigarette tax proposals should not be referred to voters. It's just not fair to allow a majority of citizens to pass a tax on a minority group. This defeats one of the most important protections of representative democracy, which is to protect smaller groups of citizens from the so-called tyranny of the majority. Regarding the proposal to sell cigars in packages of 20 or more, if this change was allowed to stand as written, it would eliminate every single cigar that Plaid Pantry sells. We believe this action would also drive our customers to get these products illegally. Making an entire product category illegal within our stores would have a significant impact to our business and could affect many jobs. Finally, to underscore our main point, raising taxes on 150% on anything is just not reasonable or fair. We, at a minimum, would like to encourage you to exercise some moderation to tax our customers at a lower rate. Those customers are, of course, your constituents. Thank you for hearing our testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, Vice Chair Marsh, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Emily Smith, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Small Business Association in opposition to the overtaxation of tobacco and vaping products proposed in House Bills 2123, 2158, 2159, 2169, and 2270. When taxes are high, it hurts the small business owner, corner grocers the hardest, making it hard to compete with large retailers and massive online retailers who have more products to offer. It also makes it easier for the black market to sell these products who pay no taxes. Oregon small businesses are seeing an increased cost of business from tax increases, license fee increases, gas tax increases, and expensive labor laws that exist only in Oregon and few other states. The legislature has been raising the cost of business while now attempting to raise the cost of products. What we're doing is simply taxing businesses out of business. I've submitted to the record a letter from a cigar shop owner who opened their shop in 1992. This important letter describes the challenges of a small business who's had to fight to sell a legal product in Oregon since they opened, and who has worked with this legislature to change the cigar laws years ago. In the letter, they share, if the budget is the true purpose of this proposed tax increase, you're going the wrong way. Reduce the cap by half and allow Oregon retailers to truly compete with internet sellers. Today, the tax in Oregon on 25 cigars is $12.50. But this is still more than the shipping when they order tax-free online. As a tobacco retailer with over 27 years of experience, they can tell you that there will be no reduction in cigar smokers, only a reduction in cigar buyers in Oregon. Consumers have options to skip the taxes and will exercise that option like reasonable adults the minute their cigars are taxed at 65% again. This will cost local jobs and cost the state money. Please read her letter and please oppose House Bill 2123, 2158, 2159, 2169, and 2270. As the small business owner says, there is no upside. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, Tyler Henson. I'm sorry, that was me. I was in the open floor room. Don't
worry. Welcome to the main room.
Madam Chairwoman, members of the committee, my name is Tyler Henson. I'm the Regional Government Affairs Director for the International Premium Cigar and Pipe Retailers Association. Founded in 1933, the International Premium Cigar and Pipe Retailers Association, better known as IPCPR, is the oldest, largest, most active trade association representing and assisting retailers of premium tobacco products and their suppliers. I'm speaking to you today in opposition of Senate Bill 2158 and 2270, which would eliminate the current 50-cent cap on cigars. In my work, one of my main prerogatives is educating lawmakers on the differences between our products and other tobacco products like cigarettes. Traditional large and premium cigars are an artisanal product that must endure a long, painstakingly process before ever reaching the end consumer. On average, a single premium cigar takes 4 years to produce and will be touched by over 250 hands. So what is the data on premium cigars? The PATH study, the Population Assessment of Tobacco and Health, a joint study by the FDA and the National Institutes of Health that covers a multi-year cross-section of youth and adults, which is one of the few government studies that effectively identified and analyzed data on premium cigars, and the National Longitudinal Mortality Study, an article published on the Journal of American Medicine analyzed the NML study, which tracked a population of 350,000 Americans for nearly three decades. The article, Association of Cigarette, Cigar, and Pipe Use with Mortality Risk in the U.S. Population, examined the relationship between mortality risk and the use across a range of tobacco products over a population of 350,000 individuals for nearly three decades. The data from the government-funded and led studies definitively prove that premium cigars are a unique product category that are almost exclusively enjoyed by older adults and frequently. The study found the average age of an individual's first premium cigar is 30 years old, compared to 16.7 years for cigarettes. The average premium cigar consumer smokes 1.2 days out of every 30, compared to 29.6 days out of 30 for cigarette smokers. 97% of all premium cigar smokers do not smoke daily, and there's no more meaningful correlation between cigars and cigarette smoking. Removing the current cap on premium cigars will not achieve the outcomes hoped for by the proponents of this bill. Instead, raising the cost of premium cigars will only change the purchasing behavior of consumers to online stores, where zero tax is collected and distributed to the state. The removal of the cap will decrease revenue in two ways. First, the tax which would be collected that funds transportation for senior citizens and anti-tobacco cessation programs will be greatly diminished to lost sales from online retailers based in Florida and Pennsylvania, where there is zero sales tax on these products. Second, the brick-and-mortar premium tobacconists will see a decrease in revenue, which will impede their ability to operate and remain competitive against the online marketplace. This will also diminish sales of accessories for premium cigar consumptions, which would otherwise be purchased at the retail, such as cigar cutters, lighters, humidification packets, humidors for storage, and other products. Recently, other states have followed suit with adopting a cap on premium cigars. Seeing the importance of these sales within the confines of brick-and-mortar establishments, Michigan, Minnesota, and just this month, New Mexico, established a cap on cigars. Thank you for committee for your time, and I'm available to answer any of your questions.
Thank you for being here. I'm going to call the next panel up. While I do that, I'd like to announce the next panel. Following that will be Jason Weber, Keith Fisher, and John Harper. That will be after the next panel. And then while this panel is coming up, I would like Legislative Revenue Office to please explain very briefly what the five different bills are. Some are similar and some are different. So the next panel will be Madison Gable, Tess Wright, and Hannah Pomeroy.
So, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, very briefly, I have a table that's on the projector here that shows the differences, or a brief summary between of the bills. House Bill 2123 expands the definition of tobacco products to include this inhalant form of nicotine that you've heard some testimony on so far. House Bill 2158 removes the per cigar limitation on the cigar tax. House Bill 2159 also expands the tobacco products definition to include this inhalant form of nicotine and imposes a tax on that form of nicotine. House Bill 2169 again expands the tobacco products definition to include this inhalant form of nicotine and imposes a tax on that form. And then finally, House Bill 2270 also defines inhalant form of nicotine, it taxes that form of nicotine, and it increases the tax rate on cigarette distribution by about $2 per pack of cigarettes.
Thank you. Okay. And we will set your timer for 3 minutes each. We'll set the next panel for 3 minutes each, and then I'll reevaluate how many people are left for the timing. But you get 3 minutes.
Nathanson and the members of the committee. For the record, my name is Madison Gable, and I'm a junior at Westview High School. Rebels is a student-led organization in partnership with Providence Health and Services. Our primary goal is to educate the younger generation of students on the harmful effects of nicotine and other tobacco products. In the past, the Rebels' attention was focused on products like chewing tobacco or hookah. But just recently, we've noticed that juuling has a major threat and danger to a student like myself and has changed the focus of our mission to combat this. I'm here today to ask you to support on the tax of vaping products and electronic cigarettes. Because Juul and other forms of electronic vapes and cigarettes are so new, very few even know or understand what a Juul is. Juuls are everywhere. I see them in classrooms, in students' pockets, backpacks, books, you name it. They are small, easily accessible, and they look just like flash drives. I've seen students take many bathroom breaks just to get their next hit in the bathroom to satisfy their unknown addiction to the nicotine. I remember my sophomore year of high school, I had a French presentation. My partner never showed up, and I ended up having to present all by myself. Due to her absence, my grade in that class severely suffered. After the presentation, I went to the bathroom to find my partner juuling with another of her friends. In another instance, I was sitting in class and witnessed one student take a hit of his Juul right when the teacher had turned his back just for a few seconds. I've also witnessed the withdrawals of nicotine and how bad the symptoms truly are. This is why we need to educate our legislators about the growing epidemic of e-cigarette use and vaping devices just like Juul, and speak about the harmful effects on the growing bodies of the adolescents and the students, and take a step forward to educate everyone. Our generation is in danger, and we need your help to change it. I urge you to vote for this tobacco tax, including electronic cigarettes and vaping devices. Thank you for this time and your opportunity.
Thank you. Okay.
Chair Nathanson and member of the committee, for the record, I'm Tess Wright. I'm a junior at Beaverton High School and a member of Providence Rebels. I'm here today to ask for your support for the tax on vaping products and electronic cigarettes. Vape products and e-cigarettes are primarily used by high schoolers and serve as a gateway drug into even more harmful substances for a young and developing generation. Their inconspicuous design, along with their marketing of brightly colored packaging and fruity flavors, makes the product extremely appealing to youth. Juul, an e-cigarette most popular among middle and high school students, contains one of the highest levels of nicotine when compared to other nicotine devices on the market. With an absence of FDA regulation on Juul, youth continue to remain unaware of what they inhale and how much nicotine they are inhaling. Many students are becoming addicted to nicotine without even knowing it. We are the guinea pig generation for this product, and Juul is pulling straight from Big Tobacco's playbook. They have been so successful with that their brand name is now used as a common verb among middle school and high school students. Becoming an addict to such a powerful substance is very dangerous, especially for the undeveloped brains of unknowing teenagers. I've had friends that have turned to cigarettes when they are unable to get a hold of an e-cigarette or when purchasing e-cigarettes are too expensive. I've seen the damage that these products have on students' grades and future. Nicotine affects the part of the brain the responsible for memory, attention, and learning. This is why many students my age who have been exposed to nicotine have fallen behind in school and put nicotine before their academics, family, and social lives. E-cigarettes do not belong in the hands of these impressionable youth. Help make sure they don't get there. Tobacco 21 was a great step forward in stopping underage nicotine use, but it is still an ongoing battle. I urge you to pass the tax HB 2270 and continue to pave the way for a cleaner and healthier generation. Thank you.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Hannah Pomeroy. I am a senior at Beaverton High School and a member of the Providence Rebels for a Cause. I'm here today to ask for your support on a tax that taxes tobacco and vaping products. This issue is important to me because as the last few days of my senior year go by, I see more and more of my friends developing an addiction to the nicotine and vaping products. This will lead to a lifetime of tobacco use because of the statistic that people are four times more likely to turn to cigarettes after vaping products. My classmates fall for the advertisements which make vaping products seem cool and appealing to teens by adding flavors and making them customizable. The excitement over the product started my freshman year and have only gotten worse. More and more school-wide instances are occurring because of the products, even with students or even for students who don't use these products receiving a consequence for the actions of others. For example, some schools are now having to take the doors off of the entrance to the bathrooms to easily catch students getting a quick fix during classes. This invasion of privacy isn't individualized for people who vape, it's for the whole community. Vaping and e-cigarettes are starting to get in the way of students' educational time also by making them leave class to feed their nicotine addiction, even going as far as vaping in class when a teacher's back is turned and blowing the smoke into their sleeve. These products aren't only taking educational time away from students who use them, but for the whole school too, as sometimes fire alarms go off when individual students are vaping in the bathrooms, making the whole school need to evacuate. Implementing a tobacco tax will highly discourage teenagers from using these related products, as teens are becoming more and more price sensitive because of their growing responsibility with their money. Teens are becoming less dependent on their parents and starting to work part-time minimum wage jobs when they have time, likely making them unable to support a nicotine addiction. Teenagers are starting to realize the worth of things and the level of work needed to purchase what they want. This, mixed with the tobacco tax, can greatly influence their behavior, driving them away from purchasing vaping products and e-cigarettes at higher prices. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you all today. Raising the legal age to buy these products at 21 was a great start in solving this issue, but it's definitely not a solution. This is why I highly urge you to pass tobacco tax HB 2270 that includes vaping and e-cigarettes, as this is another step to reducing the usage of these products among children and teenagers. Thank you.
Thank you all for being here, for the students who are with us, but also for everyone else here who, for whom this is the first time you've come to your Capitol to talk to legislators. Welcome to your Capitol, and thank you for taking the time. Some of you have traveled quite a ways, but now you see, it might sound scary. Oh, you're going to testify at the state legislature. It's just you come here and you talk to your state representatives and state senators. So thank you all. Okay, next we have Jason Weber, Keith Fisher, John Harper, and following that we will go to Dr. Peter Reed. Dr. Peter Reed will be next, and I think Eric Fruits and Daniel Morris will be after that.
Chairs, members of the committee, how y'all doing today? My name is Jason Weber, and I help people quit smoking for a living. I love doing what I do. It's very rewarding. I own two brick and mortars by the name of Smokeless Solutions out of Roseburg, Oregon, and I also manufacture some of the highest award-winning e-liquid in the United States under the name Vape Crusaders. With the help of my wife and about a dozen employees, we've helped save several thousand people from their smoking habits with coaching and vapor products over the years. How many doctors can say that? Also, vaping is the only thing that helped me quit my 14-year cigarette habit, but I'm not gonna get into my story. I'd rather talk about numbers today. Those of you who didn't hear it the first time, smoking is the number one most preventable cause of death in the U.S., killing over 480,000 people a year. smoking, not vaping. It also cost Oregon $1.5 billion a year in health care and over $347 million a year in Medicaid, tobacco-related diseases. Which is why I find it crazy that I'm here opposing a 95% tax on my business. You know what else is 95%? The statistics of how much safer vaping is than smoking. The last couple of times I fought this bill, our opposition gave a lot of false health claims, and I've heard a few of them again. But realistically, the truth is out. From the UK to American studies, it's shown that the panic has been over nothing. Now that it's been proven that vaping is twice as successful as getting people off of smoking than the patches and the gum, I'm hearing from our lobbyists that the reason we are having this outrageous tax is because of teen vaping use. First, I'd like to point out that teen smoking is at an all-time low. As far as the numbers that were quoted earlier for teen vaping, those are reported for teens that have tried vaping in the last 30 days, not teens that vape consistently. And for the record, my shop does not sell Juul, and most of our vape stores do not sell Juul. Second, none of us want minors vaping. That is, you know, that's something I wholeheartedly believe all of us vape shop owners, manufacturers, that's not what we want, and I think we can come up with a reasonable solution on how to help. Third, I'd like to point out that our shops are statistically the most strict on carding. The internet and mini marts that we should be looking at as far as where minors are getting these products. And forcing us to raise our prices is not going to keep teens from rebelling. That's a fact. You know what it will do, though, is it will double our prices, which will send customers online or out of state or worse back to smoking. Thinking about how much of the taxes that you get from my employees, my businesses, how many jobs have been created, you'll lose that, too. Because if I'm being honest, if this tax goes through, it's going to force me to shut my doors, and I will either move to Nevada or New Mexico, and I'll manufacture my e-liquid there. For the record, I don't want to do that because I love helping people quit smoking face-to-face. You might wonder why I would do that, and it's because those states have brought vapor owners to the table, and they've, they talked about a reasonable tax that would allow y'all to get some of the money missing from cigarette sales and also allow us to keep running our businesses.
3 minutes has passed.
Shoot, I'm sorry.
Could you summarize, or have you sent us written testimony?
I haven't. I'll finish up quick.
If you have that in writing, we'd be happy to keep a copy of it and post it.
Okay. Sure. I appreciate your time today. Thank you. I oppose the taxes on vaping, and I urge you to do the same.
Thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to come here and talk. I just want to talk about myself for a moment. My name is Keith Fisher. I'm from Grants Pass, Oregon. My wife and I own Tribal Vape. We've been in business for over 5 years. I was a smoker for almost 39 years. I had a lot of problems health-wise because of smoking. I found vaping. I tried everything. I went to my doctor. I got prescriptions. I've tried patches. I tried gums. I tried everything in the world to quit smoking, and nothing ever worked. And I happened to be a long-haul truck driver and with my wife, and we stopped at the Oklahoma State Fair, and we found a guy that had a booth there that was selling vapor products. And I spent 2 hours there with the gentleman as he sold me a little unit, and it was the only thing that ever helped me quit. And it was amazing, because it took 30 days for my lungs to clear up. It took 6 months for me to be able to run. Before that, I couldn't tie my shoes without wheezing and huffing. I couldn't walk anywhere, I couldn't do anything. So 5 years ago, I got blood clots in my feet, and because of the risk of stroke, I lost my CDL, and my wife and I didn't know what else to do. And because of the vaping, we decided to open a store in Southern Oregon. My wife is a very strong woman. She's part Native American. She's very hard-headed. We had kids at 18 years old before it was illegal to sell to minors in our store. 17-year-olds would come in our store, and she'd send them packing. which was great. And then 18-year-olds would come in our store, and when they were buying a product, she would ask them if they chewed or smoked or what the reason why they were buying it, and they said that they were just buying it because their friends were doing it, and they were asking for a product with nicotine in it. Well, my wife would refuse to sell them a product with nicotine in it, and she would sell them something with nothing as far as nicotine goes, and I'm very proud of her because of that. So 2 weeks ago, I was diagnosed with late stage emphysema, COPD. This is the fault of myself, and I realize that because of the habits that I've had in my life. But the fact that I vape now instead of smoke, my doctor said that I have probably extended my life by 12 years. So I just wanted people to know that vaping does save lives. And most of the people behind me that are from small shops like ourselves, we're just afraid that we're going to lose what we've built, and we've risked everything, our retirements, our incomes, everything to do what we've done. And we're just afraid. So thank you.
Well, I'm as nervous as anybody, more than the youngsters that were here earlier. Vice Chairs, I want to first say that I'm a proud Oregonian. I've lived here my whole life. I've been in the tobacco business for over 25 years. I have a small chain of four stores. Two of them sit on the borders of Oregon and Washington. I have one at the base of the bridge in Rainier, and I have one in Astoria. We have spent our entire life in this industry. It's been progressive, regressive. We've battled this for many years. I'm not here to speak on my behalf as much as I'm here to speak on behalf of the 40 employees that I have. And we generate $10 million worth of revenue for the state of Oregon throughout my shops. We have a huge tax advantage over Washington. And I have seen the increase, because I've been here a long time when we didn't have advantages, how much revenue is driven across those bridges. They don't just come over to buy tobacco. They come over to buy accessory items. So the hubs of these bridges are critical to extra sales and lost revenue that's going to be pushed back across the bridge. And we talk about this black market stuff. I deal with that in Longview already. They come across Oregon, but Longview's black market, I can't compete with some of the stuff that they say that goes on over there, because the black market is prevalent, whether you believe it or not. They go to reservations, buy OTP products, other tobacco items, and then they sell them over there at a more advantaged position than I can legally. So we're currently in the middle of a real estate transaction that is capital investment back into the economy, a $750,000 building. The hub of Rainier you've seen has never been developed. The only way to develop that thing is to bring those people across the bridge. Alcohol, lottery, and tobacco bring them. With tobacco bringing the traffic count, 35,000 people moving through that hub there, we've done a traffic count, coming through Highway 30 there, and most of that is Washington business coming into Oregon. Pushing that back across the bridge is just not conducive to business or Oregon's tax revenue. Finally, you've asked us as business owners to do a lot of things. As Oregonian business owners, you've raised it to 21, which all my stores are 21 and older. You can't come in under 21, period. They're locked off to 21. You've asked me to increase wages. I've done so. You've asked me to offer paid sick leave. I've done so. You've asked me to offer retirement services that the state now participates in. I already have a 401k plan in place. My employees have retirement plans. And it's all based on Washington revenue, not Oregon. You take Rainier, you know how big it is. All that money coming across is supporting 40 employees. A tax increase of this magnitude is just too strong. I am in favor of incremental increases like the legislature did a couple years ago, where you took 10 cents a year, 10 cents a year, 10 cents a year. If you want to take a dollar a year, a dollar a year, a dollar a year, but don't kill the vaping business, which is a huge plus. We see shifts every day in that. So I'm proud of the vape industry. I don't think they should be taking a big hit. And from business owner aspects, don't take such a big hit on us. We've earned this. We've been in this business a lot of years, and we support a lot of people. And so I oppose every House bill on the list, 2158, 2159, 2169, 2270. I agree with the medical aspects of this, don't get me wrong.
Go on. Thank you, and before you leave the table, for the sake of the recording, you please say your name for the record?
It is John Harper.
Thank you, appreciate it. Thank you all. So now we have Dr. Peter Reed, Eric Fruits, Daniel Morris, and after that, we will move to maybe Cole Olinger, Matt Minahan, and Colin. Yes.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. I'm Dr. Peter Reed. I'm a pediatrician. I practice in Tigard, and I live in Portland, Oregon. Today, I'm here representing the Oregon Pediatric Society, or OPS. OPS is the state chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Our members are committed to improving the health and well-being of all Oregon children. We support House Bill 2270 to raise tobacco taxes, including on vaping products and devices. Oregon has seen a dramatic rise in vaping among teens. We pediatricians see this in our offices every day, as more and more teens report either intermittent or daily vaping use of vaping products, such as Juul. And I'll say that because nicotine is very addictive, cessation counseling is already extremely difficult. With cigarettes and other conventional tobacco products, cessation counseling, you know, teens understand that those are harmful. With the vaping products, as you've heard from previous testimony, that perception of harm is just not there. And so there's an insidious sort of addiction that has taken place. The Oregon Healthy Teen Survey says that e-cigarette use among 11th graders nearly tripled from 5% in 2013 to 13% in 2017. And based on national data, it looks like 2018, the Oregon teen vaping rate was likely greater than 21%. Furthermore, of the teens who currently use tobacco, half started by vaping. So contrary to suggestions from the industry that vaping can be a tool to quit cigarettes, for teens, vaping is the golden ticket to a lifetime of nicotine dependence. Vaping products and devices should not remain tax-free and therefore less expensive and more appealing to youth. House Bill 2270 remedies this by taxing vaping products and devices on a par with other deadly tobacco products. House Bill 2270 also will cut teen tobacco use by raising cigarette prices. OHA estimates that the $2 per pack increase on cigarettes will lead to a 24% or nearly a quarter reduction in teen cigarette smoking. By requiring that cigarettes, little cigars, most cigarillos, and any flavored versions of these products be packaged 20 to a pack, House Bill 2270 will effectively raise the sticker price of these products and discourage their use among teens who are particularly price sensitive and drawn to flavored and cheap tobacco products. OPS also endorses the use of funds raised by these taxes to support tobacco prevention programs and health programs through the OHA. So the Oregon Pediatric Society supports House Bill 2270 by raising the cost of purchase deadly tobacco products, including the vaping devices and products. House Bill 2270 will dramatically decrease youth tobacco use in Oregon, and this will allow more teens to live tobacco-free, healthy, and productive lives. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, and Marsh. My name is Eric Fruits. I'm an economist and an adjunct professor of economics at Portland State University. I've already submitted to this committee probably the most comprehensive literature review on the economics and taxation of vapor products, but today I'm talking about House Bill 2270. The governor's budget and Oregon Health Authority project the increased taxes on cigarettes and other nicotine-containing products would raise approximately $199 million, with $173 million of that associated with the tax on cigarettes. My research and analysis on this, which I've submitted, indicate that these projections are substantially overstated, as they do not accurately reflect the loss of revenues that will be associated with lost sales from cross-state purchases. In fact, I estimate that the cigarette tax will provide less than $115 million a year in additional revenue. Also, because of the loss of sales to neighboring states, the states that are bordering Oregon are actually likely to see their own cigarette tax revenues increase by $90 to $100 million because we raised our taxes. By reducing the export of cigarettes out of Oregon, the proposed tax increase will actually shift the burden from funding OHA from out-of-state cigarette buyers to Oregon's own residents. Because Washington currently has one of the highest cigarette tax rates in the country, the state's revenue bureau itself estimates that more than one-third of the cigarettes consumed in Washington are not taxed by Washington. Commercial smuggling has gotten so bad in the state of Washington that in 2015, the state authorized the budget funds to hire 12 enforcement officers for tobacco taxes. I've also included in my report a map of county-level cigarette sales for Oregon and Washington. The data is provided by a group called MSAI, and I've actually included the data in my submission so that LRO can use it to help inform their ongoing analysis of this bill. This MSAI data confirms the previous findings of Oregon's own Office of Economic Analysis and the Washington Department of Revenue that, in general, because of differences in cigarette taxes, Washington does lose sales to lower tax Oregon, while Oregon loses sales to lower cost Idaho and also gaining sales from Washington. HB 2270 will lead to increased illegal commercial smuggling of cigarettes into Oregon. I understand Cormark has submitted written testimony describing the profitability of illegal smuggling if this tax goes into effect. We've seen the effect of steep product taxes on the retail industry. The Wall Street Journal reports that when Philadelphia imposed their soda tax, it forced at least one supermarket to close and another to reduce its employment. And that's because when consumers stop shopping for soda at those stores, they stop shopping for everything at those stores. This observation is supported by testimony submitted here to this committee by the Korean American Grocers Association of Oregon, which has the same concerns. I urge this committee to carefully consider the broader implications of House Bill 2270 and what it will have on the state's economy. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Marsh and Finley, and members of the committee. My name is Daniel Morris. I'm a doctor of public health. I serve on the boards of the Tobacco-Free Coalition of Oregon, Upstream Public Health, and the Multnomah County Public Health Advisory Board. And I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2158 to eliminate Oregon's tax break on luxury cigars. Oregon doesn't need a tax break on luxury cigars. It makes our tax system less equitable. It costs millions of dollars that would otherwise go to the health plan, to tobacco prevention, and to the general fund. And it really amounts to a public subsidy for smoking, not all smoking, just people who smoke luxury cigars. The tax break itself is inherently unfair. One of these big cigars can contain more tobacco than an entire pack of cigarettes, yet the tax on it is less than half of what the state taxes the cigarettes. So I think it's one of the most kind of egregious examples of in our tax code of just an unfair tax break that should be eliminated. Last year, about 1.8 million cigars were sold in Oregon that were tax capped. And I estimate that eliminating the tax cap would bring in somewhere between $5 and $10 million per biennium. Those numbers, it's a little bit hard to estimate just because of the range of those products, but that's my best guess, and I'd be interested to see what other folks have to say about it. For some reason, the tax break on luxury cigars is not included in the tax expenditure report, so there's no official estimate kind of in that book. For over 10 years now, I've studied tobacco taxes, I've studied economic and employment data. I've yet to see any evidence that Oregon's tax break on luxury cigars has created or saved any jobs. Most states do not have tax breaks on luxury cigars, and they still have cigar shops and tobacco stores. If Oregon gets rid of its tax break on luxury cigars, we will still have cigar shops and tobacco stores. We were the first state to grant a tax break to luxury cigars, and I urge you to make Oregon the first state to get rid of it. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We're now moving to the panel that I announced, Cole, Matt, and Colin. Starting with this panel, I'm going to reset the timer for 2 minutes each. And if you had prepared remarks, even if you haven't submitted them to us yet, please feel free to give us a copy so we can have it for our record. But 2 minutes each because there are so many more people signed up to testify. We're going to try to hear from as many as we can. You can go ahead and start.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Marsh and Finley, other members of the committee, my name is Cole Olinger, and I represent Jackson Food Stores in opposition of House Bill 2270. As a convenience store operator in the state of Oregon, I'm expressing concerns with the proposed $2 tax increase on cigarettes. This drastic 150% plus increase would dramatically impact our business, negatively impact our customer and employees, and create unwanted externalities as well as generate an uncertain revenue source. Jax is a privately held company that started as a single gas station in 1975. We now operate over 50 stores in Oregon and employ over 700 Oregonians. Cigarettes generate close to one-third of our store outlets' in-store sales revenues. We rely heavily on the foot traffic generated by tobacco products, which lead to additional product purchases in our stores. Increasing this tax would dramatically jeopardize our business as customers would shift to other outlets, including neighboring states with cheaper taxes, including Nevada and Idaho, which would be significantly cheaper, or other forms of contraband slash counterfeit areas where taxes are not collected. This would shift revenue away from Oregon retailers and communities and put jobs at risk. Implementing a $2 tax on cigarettes would be an astounding jump from the current level and would lead to Oregon being one of the highest tax states in the nation. This would translate from going from 33rd to 6th in the nation. The regressive nature of this tax would harm a relatively small percentage of the population whom can least afford it. Evidence shows that a tax of this sort would lead to these individuals consuming less of other goods and services in the local economies and continuing to smoke. This proposal does not meet the merit of stability, certainty, and sufficiency required to be, with confidence, be implemented. Evidence on recent excise taxes implemented from states between 2009 and 2016 show that 85% of these increases failed to generate the revenue projected. Additionally, per a recent Tax Foundation report, Washington is experiencing a 44% smuggling rate on tobacco products. Oregon's new proposed rate would be $3.33, or 30 cents higher than even Washington. We strongly urge you to reconsider the magnitude of this increase and reflect on a more equitable and sustainable means to this end.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt Minahan. I represent EC Blend, Emerald Valley, and select clients of the vaping retail industry. I'm here to testify in opposition of the list of bills today. I'm going to be brief and just kind of go through, just make some points that haven't been made today, so forgive me if I'm a little choppy. I can't tell you how damaging a 95% wholesale tax would be on the brick and mortar vaping stores. Brick and mortars are where the IDs are checked, where we can regulate IDs, and so apologize. So we want to keep them. We definitely want to keep them in the stores and off the internet. If we, and we have proposals also that reduce the, we have proposals that reduce the tobacco fund, or that propose to reduce the tobacco fund. And here we have an industry that has been proven to be safer and cost effective and cost the taxpayers nothing. So a 95% tax would tax tax those shops out of existence. Sorry, I'm a little choppy. I'd also like to shed light on some differences between it's not going to be as clean as you think. It's not like cigarettes where we're going to definitely force people to the internet. It's not like cigarettes where when cigarette prices increase by $5 or $6, I can't get online and say, well, Idaho's got them cheaper. We can do that here. Definitely with vaping is going to just promote the internet. And also, I'd just like to go over some specific issues that we have within the bills, 2159 and 2169, sections 13 of the bill that talk about the licensure program. We're not opposed to a licensure program. We want definitely more in-depth discussion on that. We'd like to talk about some preemption.
The timer went off. Do you have your notes?
I apologize. Yes, I'll put it. I'm sorry I was so choppy.
No,
I just
that's
wanted
fine.
To go over points that weren't made.
And we'll be
Thank
happy
so
to
much.
Take your notes, put them on the record, and then okay. We can all read them.
Yeah. Good morning. Good morning. My name is Colin Rao. I'm the founder and CEO of Emerald Vapors Holdings out of Eugene, Oregon. We're a brick and mortar retailer. We have four retail stores, and we employ 30 people in Oregon, and have been in business for almost 7 years now. Our customers are working class Oregonians who were former cigarette smokers. The majority of our customers are aged 35 to 55. I've spent a lot of time interacting with my customers. I've done a variety of surveys to find out who they are. And many of them are on a limited income. A recent study by the CDC on the burden of tobacco use estimated that 21% of smokers earn less than $35,000 a year. I'm sure you already know this. Smokers are typically working class, low wage earners. Brick and mortar stores are a safe, age restricted place for adults to purchase electronic cigarettes. Emerald Vapors does not sell to products to youth, and we do not target youth. A 95% tax would have a series of detrimental consequences. Most importantly, and I think we can all agree, it will limit access to safe alternatives to combustible cigarettes. Many of my customers will not be able to afford these alternatives to cigarettes. And may return to combustible cigarettes or other tobacco products. Based on my intimate knowledge of the industry and my customers, Emerald Vapors would be forced out of business, and all 30 of my employees would be out of work. Does that mean I have 1 minute left?
No, that was 2 minutes.
Okay. So I firmly believe, and we're already very competitive with online sales. I believe this will force customers to begin purchasing products online where age restriction is not enforced. In fact, I met a person last night. I was having tea, and this young man was outside vaping, and I started asking him questions, as I often do, where he gets his vapor products, if he'd ever been to my store. Turns out the young man was 20 years old and buys all of his products online. He lives here in Oregon. So
thank you for wrapping up.
Sure.
Okay, next we will have Will Morris, Arlene Cantor, Kathy O'Healy. And then after that, we'll have Tootie Smith, Edward Wong, Daniel Lynn. We normally adjourn at a quarter till. We'll see if we can get all of you in. By then. Yes. Please
begin. Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Kathy Otley. I am the state lead ambassador for the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network. I can make my presentation short because you've heard so much of the details as to the addiction and to quitting tobacco. 4 years ago today, this morning, I lost my youngest sister, Margie, to cancer. This was not the first loss for our family. We'd experienced four other deaths. Last November, on Thanksgiving Day, my sister-in-law, Barb, died from COPD. She was a lifelong smoker and spent the last months of her life attached to an oxygen tank. I know there were many times Barb wanted to quit. Her health had been greatly affected by smoking cigarettes. I can't help but think that maybe an increase in the cost of her cigarettes would have been enough to encourage Barb to quit. As you know, the majority of smokers do want to quit. And in Oregon, our tobacco prevention and education program does work. I ask each of you this morning to stand with me and other ACS CAN volunteers in protecting the health of millions of Oregonians. I thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, Vice Chair Marsh, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is William Miller. I'm a descendant of the Cherokee and Blackfeet people, and I serve as the Health Equity Program Coordinator at the Native American Youth and Family Center. Our Native American communities and tribes throughout the United States uphold and value the importance of tobacco as traditional medicine used to promote mental, spiritual, physical, and emotional well-being. When our people use it in a sacred manner, it's not to be used or correlated with addiction or other detrimental health impacts. Though when it comes to our youth, adults, and elders consuming cigarettes in an unhealthy and non-ceremonial manner, we must implement public upstream public health approaches to ensure The focus is on prevention and intervention. The tobacco tax does just that. This legislation will provide $346 million per biennia for the Oregon Health Plan, which provides health care for nearly 1 million of Oregon's most vulnerable populations, as well as bringing meaningful investments into communities and culturally specific programs to address prevention and cessation of tobacco and nicotine products, not used in a ceremonial way. 41.4% of American Indian Alaskan Natives on the Oregon Health Plan consume tobacco products outside of ceremonial purposes in an unhealthy manner. It's clear that the highest consumers of tobacco-related products in the state identify as American Indian Alaskan Native. Raising the tobacco price of tobacco and nicotine products is the single most effective tool to reduce addictive proclivities. A 10% increase in price will lead to a 4% reduction among adult consumption and a 7% reduction in youth consumption. E-cigarette companies target youth with highly addictive chemical properties masked by a flavored nicotine-filled product. This product entices youth to experiment, leading to higher rates of youth exposure and addiction to chemical-based nicotine and social conformity of fitting in. Since 2017, the number of middle schoolers who say they've tried e-cigarettes has increased by 48%, effectively creating a whole new target market and generation of addicted tobacco users. I urge your passage of 2270. Thank you.
Hi. Good morning, Chairman Nathanson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Arlene Cantor. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of HB 2270. I'm a resident of Clackamas County. I'm a cancer epidemiologist, and I'm here today as a volunteer member of the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. Tobacco is the leading cause of preventable death in Oregon and around the country. Moreover, tobacco is the cause of about 30% of all cancer diagnoses. Raising the tobacco tax is known to be the single most effective way to encourage smokers to quit and to price young people out of purchasing their first pack of cigarettes. Most smokers want to quit, but they need more incentive. Increasing the tobacco tax by a significant amount provides this. The U.S. Surgeon General, the Centers for Disease Control, and the World Health Organization have all concluded that raising taxes helps large numbers of smokers to quit and have strongly advocated doing so. Oregon's current tobacco tax has gone up just 5 cents in the last 17 years. This puts us in the bottom third of the nation, along with a smoking rate that is slightly higher than the national average. HB 2270 would bring Oregon's tax in line with Washington and California. Adding a tax to e-cigarettes is especially important in our efforts to dissuade young people from using them. The dramatic increase in the use of e-cigarettes by young people is threatening the progress that we've made in reducing their tobacco use. Studies have indicated that the great majority of teens have no idea that e-liquids contain nicotine, which is easily very addictive, especially in that age group. The brain continues to develop until about age 25, and nicotine interferes with the normal development of the brain. We also have evidence that 30 to 40% of young people who begin smoking with e-cigarettes will, within a year, also start using tobacco cigarettes. Smokers in Oregon pay about $6 per pack of cigarettes up front, but there's an additional cost of over $8 a pack that we all pay in direct medical care costs for smoking-related illnesses. So the proposed increase represents a small part of this. Please support HB 2270 to raise the Oregon tobacco tax as a proven way to save lives, and thank you.
For mispronouncing your name, and to anyone else here, I apologize if I haven't met you yet. I probably didn't know how to say your name.
Judy Smith, Edward Wong, Daniel Lane.
And this will be our last panel for today.
Good morning. My name is Daniel Lane, and I've worked in sales for three different tobacco manufacturers over the course of the last 18 years. My territories in sales have primarily been along the Oregon and Washington border. Over the course of the last 18 years, I have seen the state of Washington drastically raise the tobacco taxes, cigarette taxes, and I've seen the detrimental results to small business owners in the Southwest Washington area. I've watched small businesses either lay off employees, completely shut down their stores due to the ongoing causes of high tax increases on tobacco consumers. These types of tobacco tax increases cause tobacco consumers to not simply quit using tobacco products, but they look for alternatives to purchase their products. I have seen consumers drive hours away to Native American tribal smoke shops in the Tacoma, Washington area to purchase their tobacco products tax-free. I've also talked to tobacco consumers over the course of the last 10 years, primarily, that purchase their products online to avoid paying state taxes. If these tobacco taxes pass, I feel that the exact same thing will happen to the state of Oregon that has happened in the state of Washington. So I urge you to oppose any and all tobacco taxes. Thanks.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Edward Wong. I'm with the Oregon Cigar Association. And I do echo the sentiment of many of the testimonies here from the small business owners. I do have testimony myself here from other small business owners, but rather I think I'm going to just talk about the difference. I'm here representing cigars, and I want the committee members to understand the difference between cigars and our tobacco. With cigars, it's the premium cigars specifically, they're 100% organic product. They don't use fertilizers. They're all natural. There's great care in growing that type of leaf. Similar wine, there's aging and fermentation with the tobaccos to bring out the flavors. As opposed to, say, a cigarette, which is processed and manufactured with harmful chemicals. The consumers don't need cigars. They enjoy cigars. And with this tax cap, so I really oppose HB 2158. I know HB 2270 doesn't differentiate between tobacco. Smoke is smoke is smoke. The county health officer testified there's no silver bullet approach to this. What I'm hoping the committee understands is that there is a different risk profile, different way of using, consuming the product. Cigars are in a much lower risk profile. The FDA themselves have published a study that said 1 to 2 cigars a day has no impact on the mortality rate. So I urge the committee to consider that when they lump the tobacco products together and treat them all the same in taxing. Thank you.
Thank you, committee. Tootie Smith, Clackamas County. Commissioner retired representing Taxpayers Association of Oregon. Thank you. When Governor Brown drafted her $800 million tax on alcohol and tobacco, we did a petition against it and also included any tax on soda. We gathered 4,000 signatures in 40 days and told the people we would bring these petitions with us to the Capitol if any product tax emerges, and here they are. When it comes to tobacco taxes, we went to the experts at the Mackinac Institute Center and asked, what would happen to Oregon tobacco sales if we dramatically increase the tax by what is being proposed? Their national model shows that Oregon would lose considerably to the black market. In fact, over 1/3 of all tobacco sales would be sold by the black market and other tax avoidance schemes and strip away from our local small businesses. A cigarette tax is regressive. It hurts the poor and the lower class. We should not build a funding base on the backs of the lower class and a revenue base that is declining. We oppose raising the per stick cigar tax as well. Already, local cigar shops lose customers to online sales. When we lose to online sales, we lose tax revenue. We lose jobs, and the state loses the ability to track and understand who is selling to whom. We also oppose hitting vaping products with high taxes because they are helping people to quit smoking. Thank you.
Thank you all for your testimony today. I appreciate the information, the respectful comments. As you know, we plan to have public hearings on all five bills again tomorrow. For today, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2123, 2158, 2159, 2169, and 2270. There is no other business before us today. We are adjourned.